This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And today there is some music on the show, but it's a little bit of the more of that tagline that we use for Live and Local. First up, we have actors from the Rantoul Theater Group who are performing a show that they've created themselves called Dracula the Undead. It is based on the Bram Stoker novel, very closely on the Bram Stoker novel, and we're going to hear several scenes from that play. And then we'll be talking with Mike Boedeker, who is the creator of a film called Revolting, which was filmed in Danville and Champaign. And he's very pleased to have used a classical music score, all piano, that mostly was performed by local pianists. And we'll be hearing some samples of that and also, of course, hearing about the film, which is part of a film festival that's taking place next weekend at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign, along with another film that was also filmed locally. And that's called Leading Ladies, which I think we'll pay some attention to on, if not Monday's show, then next Thursday's show. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Are you tired of me, my darling? Did you mean those words you said when you spoke in fond affection on the day that we were wed? Tell me, could you live life over? Would you make it otherwise? Are you tired of me, my darling? Answer only with your
This is the one dream you always had. Well, I'm floating on the streams of feeling so sad. This is the one thing that you wanted to do, yeah. And now that you're gone, well, I'm seeing it through. Well, now I'm right. sing up, 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 up. Never realize it can fly. But your dreams and your memories send me through a sky as blue as your eyes. Well, now I'm rising up, up, up. Never realized it could fly. Your dreams and your memories send me through a sky as blue as your eyes.
You wanted so, made me cross my heart and promise we'd go. And this is the one place you wanted to explore. And part of the reason I came to adore you.
I'm alive. But your dreams and your memories send me through a sky as blue as your eyes. Well, now I'm rising up, up, up. Never realized I could fly. But your dreams and your memories send me through a sky as blue as your eyes. I was your husband. My wife.
That was our adventure. That was our love.
That's co-written by her. What's up?
We had a couple of excerpts from the last year's CU Folk and Roots Festival. We heard a performance first by the Ruthless Goats, who have been on this show. And then following that, we heard the Duke of Uke and his Novelty Orchestra. And next week, we're going to be focusing particularly on that festival with a number of live performers on the show and also some pre-recorded interview, or rather some phone interviews with a couple of the headliners for the festival. So I really had wanted to play some music from John Williams' score to a film version of Dracula, but it's supposed to be in our library, and I couldn't find it. And so that had to substitute, since we don't seem to have any Dracula music. And the reason I wanted to play some Dracula music is that our first guests on Live and Local today are from the Ransoul Theater Group's production of Dracula the Undead. And it's actually a creation of their own. I mean, obviously, Bram Stoker wrote the novel, but Larry Smith took that novel and wrote the stage play for it.
Yes, thank you.
By yourself or with others?
No, by myself. I started in 2006 and I completed then. I've been refining it for the last 4 years.
Wow. So it ought to be really good then.
I hope so.
We're going to find out. Well, we have a number of members of the cast who are with us on the show today. Sylvana Vandergriff of Rantoul, Randy Offner of Urbana, Mike Nelson, Michael Clay Nelson, full name from Rantoul, Shannon Hogue, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
From Fairmount, Tim Kirby, also Fairmount, and Brandon Lee Odle from Mahomet, and Larry is a Rantoul resident. And many of the characters I think you'll recognize, certainly Count Dracula. Is he called Count in the novel?
Occasionally he is, right. But most of the time they just refer to him as Dracula.
Dracula. Or Vlad Dracul is the...
He's the historic
possibly Dracula. The
historic Dracula.
Yeah.
That Bram Stoker was patterning after.
And your poster has the picture that's on the poster is of Vlad Dracul, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, I used to be really into Dracula, and so I like to look up all kinds of pictures and horrible things that they used to do to each other back in those days. Hopefully, not too many of that. Much of that is still going on. So, what gave you the idea to make this particular adaptation?
Well, remember when we were in school going through English class, and our teachers always say, "Write about what you know." And from the 1950s on, I've been seeing Dracula movies on television when it was black and white, and I followed all this other movies that came out. I went on the rental and got every movie, and read the book and watched all the movies, and decided to follow Bram Stoker's concept as it was in his book originally, not some of the other things where they mix it up and they change the characters around. And so I went through and followed that sequence that Bram Stoker did the adaptation, and just extracted the speaking parts and the parts that were recognizable to people because they've seen a lot of Dracula stuff.
Here's my burning question here, a pet peeve of mine with Dracula adaptations. Do you have the characters of Mina and Lucy as the same Mina and Lucy as they are in the book?
Yes, I do.
The reason it's a pet peeve of mine, I've never understood why in certain movies they have a Mina and they have a Lucy, but they switch them.
That's right.
Why would you do that?
It possibly has to do with who the movie actress was. Okay? In one adaptation, in the Frank Langella one, 1979, Lucy is the love interest, and Mina dies off right away. And
Kate Nelligan was Lucy.
Pardon me?
Kate Nelligan was Lucy.
Correct.
I love that. That was the movie that I wanted to play the music for.
Right. So who knows? It's the authors that wrote it, that did the adaptations. I wanted to be as true to the book as I could be. And so we're going to stay with the original characters.
And the show opens next
Friday.
Friday, and runs through what date?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 24, 25, 26, and then the following week, October 1, 2, and 3.
And where is Rantoul Theater Group doing its shows?
At Grissom Hall on the former Chinook Air Force Base.
Right. Well, we have a bunch of scenes to kind of tease people with, so we might as well launch into the first one. Who are our openers here? Are we taking things in sequence of the story?
Please. Number one would be Dracula and Jonathan, and they're at Dracula's castle in the very beginning when he first, Jonathan Harker, first meets Dracula and is pretty much scared by what he sees when he first meets him.
And in the role of Dracula, we have, I've got my notes all mixed up, so I have to apologize here. Who's Dracula?
Randy Offner.
Randy Offner. And in the role of Jonathan is Mike Nelson. Have at it. Scare us.
Mr. Harker, I'm glad you're rested well. We have much to talk about, my going to England. I long for the crowded streets of your mighty London, to be in the midst of the whirl and rush of humanity, to share life. But alas, I only know your tongue through books. To you, my friend, I look that I know it to speak.
But my dear Count, you know and speak English thoroughly.
I thank you, my friend, but I fear that I know too little. Only the grammar and the words, but yet I know not how to speak them. I wish to learn from you, Mr. Harker, before our departure for London.
I am at your service, Count Dracula.
We shall talk tonight. I have business to do during the day.
Count, please tell me something about your family history.
We Zeclis have a right to be proud. For in our veins flows the blood of many brave races who fought as the lion fight for lordship. From the tribes of Iceland, from the fighting spirit given to us by Thor and Woden, from the Huns, whose warlike foot sweep over the earth like a living flame with the blood of Attila, whose blood is in these veins. It is no wonder that we are a conquering race, that we are proud. We drove back the Magyar, the Lombard, the Avar, the Bulgar, the Turks. By the thousands, we drove them back. But the warlike days are now over. Blood is too precious a thing in these days of dishonorable peace. and the glories of the great races are as a tale that is told.
I can see how proud a people you descend from, dear Count.
It is late and close to morning, and we must off to bed. You may go anywhere you wish in the castle, except where the doors are locked. There is reason that all things are as they are. We are in Transylvania, and Transylvania is not England. Our ways are not your ways, and there shall be to you many strange things.
Dear Diary, Count Dracula is a strange person. But everything in this country is strange and unusual. He wishes me to instruct him on London and the ways of England.
That reminds me, I haven't read the novel in a long time, although I actually thought about picking it up just earlier this week and picked up The Lord of the Rings instead. I haven't read that in a long time either. No relation whatsoever. But isn't a lot of this book, of the story, the Stoker novel, based on letters and the diaries?
Letters and diary entries. The main characters who do diary entries and letters are Jonathan Harker and Mina and Lucy and Dr. Seward. Those four actually contribute to the whole 500-page-plus book that Bram Stoker wrote.
So the character of Mina, who we're going to hear next, is Jonathan Harker's wife.
At first, she's his fiancée. And later, after he has his encounter with Dracula at the castle, he escapes, and the brides come after him and suck his blood, and she comes to rescue him at a convent in Budapest. Then they get married there. So we're going to have a marriage on the stage also.
All right. Well, then people get to throw rice, I suppose. No. Before we go to the second scene, Randy, in your portraying Dracula, how did you go about studying for this role? Because I can imagine you, there's all kinds of predecessors to.
Yes. I think I drew a lot from what Larry did with the script, his interpretation of it, which is excellent. The way he adapts it and makes it historically accurate really, really helped me in my character study. But more than anything, I tried not to be anybody else. I tried to look at it as a man who has suffered for all these years and has now stopped suffering because he's found a reason not to, and yet the struggle that goes along with that because he's the bad guy, and yet there are elements within him that, if seen in a different light, would make him not the villain but just somebody who is going after what he really wants and needs.
Which is?
A woman.
And what have his sufferings been?
His sufferings have been at the hands of the people that he, quote-unquote, grew up with. His father was really big in the causes of the day, and then once his father died, they used Dracula as a child, put him on the throne as a puppet prince. He just felt manipulated from day one. And then on top of everything else, the ultimate insult was that while he was away fighting for these people, they lied to his fiance, and as a result, she does harm to herself, and that sort of strikes a chord in his deepest parts, and that's where the villain comes from.
Is this all in the book?
Yes.
I don't remember any of this stuff. Now I'm going to have to go reread it. Well, I mean, that's going to be one of the attractions of the play, I hope, that people will sort of get reminded of what the quote-unquote true story is of Count Dracula. So Randy Offner was in the role of Dracula, Mike Nelson as Jonathan Harker in that first scene. And next we have Mina Murray Harker, or Wilhelmina is the full name, played here by Sylvana Vandergriff, writing a letter to Miss Lucy.
9 May, 1897. My dearest Lucy, forgive my long delay in writing, but I've been simply overwhelmed with work. The life of an assistant schoolmistress is sometimes trying. I am longing to be with you and by the sea, where we can talk together freely and build our castles in the air. I've been working very hard lately, because I want to keep up with Jonathan's studies, and I have been practicing shorthand very assiduously. When we are married, I should be able to be useful to Jonathan, and if I can stenograph well enough, I can take down what he wants to say in this way and write it out for him on the typewriter, at which also I am practicing very hard. However, we shall see. I will tell you of my little plans when we meet. I have just had a few hurried lines from Jonathan from Transylvania. He is well and will be returning in about a week. I am longing to hear all his news. It must be nice to see strange countries. I wonder if Jonathan and I, shall ever see them together. Goodbye. Your loving, Mina. P.S. Tell me all the news when you write. You have not told me anything for a long time. I hear rumors, and especially of a tall, handsome, curly-haired man.
Who is the tall, handsome, curly-haired man? Or does that just never get named?
Arthur Holmwood.
Arthur Holmwood, that's right. I'm just looking for some of these reminders of memories from having read the book a while ago. Sylvana Vandergriff as Mina Harker, and Lucy Westenra is your friend's name. Now, in the film with Frank Langella is Dracula, we referred to earlier. Lucy is
the love interest.
But she's shown as Van Helsing's daughter, isn't she?
I believe so. You're right.
Yeah, but that's not the case in the story.
No,
in the book.
See, Mina is not anybody's daughter. Van Helsing is alone, and he just comes from Amsterdam, Holland. And the movies have made it the father-daughter thing because the actors were older character actors, and that's what I think happened. And they took license to do that.
Well, that's plus you always have to create more visual romantic interests, it seems, for these things. Our next scene is with Mina and Jonathan together. Mina, you want to set this up for us, one of you? Mike?
My character, Jonathan Harker, is recuperating in the convent, and my fiancée, Mina, comes to my side to help me recover and to tell me that we are going to be married there in Budapest and not wait until we return to London.
Oh, she's telling you what's going on. Days of women's liberation were early, I guess. Okay, so it's Mike Nelson and Sylvana Vandergriff here on Live and Local.
Jonathan, oh my dear sweet Jonathan, how are you, my love?
Mina, you are here.
Yes, my love. I left England 3 days ago to help you get well and bring you home.
Mina, I was rescued by Sister Agatha. If it were not for her, I would not be alive today.
Oh, yes. I shall thank Sister Agatha. But, Jonathan, what happened to you to become this ill?
Oh, Mina, what unspeakable horrors befell me at the castle. There is evil there. Pure evil. I cannot speak of it now. It frightens my very soul. God help me and help us all.
I am here now, Jonathan. Speak no more of it. Do not trouble your soul. It is important now that you get well. We shall be married here and return home to England together.
And Jonathan Harker, who are about to launch into the rather more difficult part and longer part of the journey in the Dracula story. We're talking with and hearing members of the Ransell Theater Group's production of Dracula the Undead, which opens next week, runs for 2 weekends at the Grissom Hall Theater in Rantoul. This is Larry Smith's own adaptation of Bram Stoker's novel, specifically for the Ransell Theater Group. Then we have this interesting character of R.H. Renfield, who is determined to be mad, but there's always some question as to whether he actually is or if it's just under the influence of Dracula and what, in fact, is the influence there. How would you answer that question? Shannon Hoag plays the character of Renfield in this story.
You're asking what's the influence as to why he's crazy?
No, I mean, is he in fact crazy? Is he under, how is it that he came under Dracula's influence?
He came under his influence, if I believe correctly, when he went to the castle the first time and then left to serve as, like, a slave, you know, a lookout as to what's going on in London and whatnot. And he kind of breaks in and out of his control, but most of the time he's under Dracula's control, and that's what causes the whole craziness, you know. It's just, I want blood and souls, but the good part of me is like, I kind of don't want to just go out and take a bite out of a human yet, kind of thing. So I'll just work on spiders and stuff like that.
And the person who is charged with caring for Renfield is Dr. Jack Seward, who's here played by Tim Kirby. And you guys are both from the same town, as it happens. Oh, got it wrong? Who are you playing, Tim? Oh, you're playing Van Helsing.
Abraham
Sorry
Van Helsing,
about
correct.
That. Yeah. Brandon Odell is Jack Seward. So let's hear you have a scene between the two of you.
Ah, Mr. Renfield. And how are we today?
Fine, Dr. Stewart. Have you brought me any food for my spiders?
Now, Renfield, what about your flies?
Flies? Such small, puny things! They have no juicy blood! Now, spiders, they are juicy and have the blood of life. Now, there is the soul of life I have been promised.
Who promised you a soul, Renfield?
The Master! He did! He said I would have immortal life through the living souls.
Tell me about the Master, Renfield.
No, I must not.
Yes, Renfield, it's all right. You're safe here. If you want to be cured, you must tell me about it.
No, I cannot.
Renfield?
The Master promised me eternal life. I do his bidding. I came with him on the ship and tended to his needs as he slept. He promised me living souls if I do his bidding. Living souls!
Do not fear, Renfield. Only I will know.
No! The Master! He knows everything!
The Master, you say? Who is the Master, Renfield? And so, you say you want living souls, Renfield?
I don't want any souls, indeed. I could not use them if I had them. They'd be of no use to me. Could not eat them or drink them.
Drink them, Renfield?
I don't want any souls!
You want life, and you like life?
Oh, yes. But you needn't worry about that. Flies and spiders. Small, puny things. Who wants them?
You want big things that you can make your teeth meet into? How would you like to breakfast on, say, an elephant?
What ridiculous nonsense you speak, Doctor! I don't want an elephant's soul, or any soul at all!
Some other time, Renfield.
Master! Master! Have you come to give me life? No, Master! I have not betrayed you. I didn't tell him anything. You promised me life, Master. But you're going to give it to her. Master, no. I am faithful to you, Master. Master, Master, Master.
And is that the end of Renfield at that point?
The sad but true.
The sad yes. but true. Well, you got your death, big death scene here on the right on Live and Local. Nice, it's a sort of disturbing, realistic, maniacal laughter there.
Yeah.
I won't ask too far about actual personalities by consulting your colleagues here. But in any event, that was Shannon Hoag in the role of R.H. Renfield and Brandon Odell as Jack Stewart, and we have about time for our final scene, which does finally involve Dr. Abraham Van Helsing, who you've got quite a lot of big shoes to fill, among others, Laurence Olivier, who played this character. Have you studied these people or just avoided them?
No, I watched all of them and then pretty much threw them all out and just kind of did my own thing.
Figuring you could do better than Laurence Olivier.
No, not Sir Lawrence.
Not Sir Lawrence. Tim Kirby in the role of Abraham Van Helsing.
Mina, wake up, Mina. Mina, what's wrong? You look so strange.
Jonathan, I cannot be with you anymore.
Dr. Seward, come quickly. Mina needs help.
Look, John, Mina's neck marks.
The same two puncture marks that Lucy had on her neck.
Yes, the mark of the vampire.
You mean?
Dracula has been here. She is only partially infected. We must guard Mina so that he does not return. Remain by her side, Jonathan. Dracula has infected poor Mina.
What can we do now, Professor?
We must guard her well so that he does not drain her blood like he did with Lucy. Remain with her. Nosferatu, you shall not get Mina like you did with Lucy.
You are too late, dear Van Helsing. My blood already flows through her veins. Soon she'll become as powerful as I am. There is nothing you can do with your puny spells and charms. She is in my power.
The power of good is far greater than the power of evil, Count Dracula. You will not possess Mina.
She is mine already. You are too late, Van Helsing. Do you think that your garlic wreaths and crucifixes can keep me away for long? I will go for now, but once Mina fully changes to Elisabetta, she will come to me. As my bride.
Dracula has been here again.
Dracula?
What has happened, Professor?
Dracula has bragged that Mina is his bride. He has infected her with his foul and evil blood.
What can we do to overcome his powers?
We have to guard Mina so that he does not return and give her more of his blood. And we must find a way to destroy him, to break the spell he holds upon Mina.
But how can we destroy him?
We have learned something. Much. Notwithstanding his brave words, he fears us. He fears time. He fears want. For if not, why does he hurry so? Dracula can be kept away by the smell of garlic and the power of the crucifix. But to destroy him, we must either put a stake through his heart while he is in his coffin and pin him to his earth box, or, because he is able to change into a wolf and is therefore part werewolf, he can be killed by a silver bullet. We must use one of these two methods.
And so you've had a teaser here of Dracula the Undead, the production being put on by the Rantoul Theater Group at Grissom Hall Theater in Rantoul, starting on the 24th of September, continuing through the 3rd of October. For more information, you can go to rtgonline.com. .org, and this is an adaptation by Larry Smith, who's been with us on the show, and I see it here says by L. Anthony Smith.
That's my pen name. It's my real name, too.
I assumed that.
Yes.
Since it's in print. And our guests have been as Count Dracula, Randy Offner, and Jonathan Harker, the solicitor, Michael Clay Nelson, in the role of Mina Harker, Sylvana Vandegrift, in the role of Van Helsing, Tim Kirby, as Dr. Jack Seward is Brandon Odell, and Shannon Hoag is the character of Renfield. Did I miss anybody? Thank you all very much for coming on the show, and best of luck with the production.
Thank you for having us.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for our show today comes in part from the 2nd Annual Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, September 23rd, 24th, and 25th in and around downtown Urbana. The festival features over 70 artists performing blues, jazz, old-time, Cajun, bluegrass, and Irish music with storytelling and more. Schedules and information are at cufolkandroots.org. Coming up, a conversation with the creator and director Mike Boedeker of a new film called Revolting on Live and Local. Thank you. the last movement of a cello concerto by Antonio Vivaldi. RV catalog listing 422. Not that you're going to be tested on that, but it's a specific concerto, that movement of which was one of several Baroque pieces that were used as the soundtrack, or at least as music involved in the film called Revolting, which was created by Mike Bodeker, who is my guest on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And as I introduced that the show at the beginning of the top of the hour, I said that the title is a little bit misleading in that you would assume that with something like that, that you might be having some sort of slasher movie or something like that. And you do, but you don't.
It's not a horror film.
It is not a horror film. Right?
Revolting is a play on words, refers to the characters, the imaginary characters of the protagonist revolting, staging a revolt, and not wanting to complete the story that he is writing, the script that he is writing. The one-sentence summary is, it's a feature film comedy about a playwright struggling to write a sequel to his one hit, but his imaginary characters revolt and won't let him.
And what was your inspiration for this story?
The inspiration was really started with a phrase. The phrase that you often hear writers say is, it wrote itself, which is supposed to mean, used figuratively, means that the writer was something, you know, the work poured out of the writer. And as I thought about that, I thought, what would that really mean? I mean, if taken literally, would it be such a good thing? And that's where the tagline comes from, which is, the play wrote itself, the playwright is not amused. So what would happen if, in fact, when a writer was writing, composing, what would happen if the characters actually disobeyed him and wanted to do the work the way that they saw it? And that's the basic premise, the dramatic setup.
What got you into filmmaking?
Been doing filmmaking since I was a kid, doing Super 8 films as a kid, and then it progressed into video. I was a broadcasting major in college, and this is my second feature. I did one several years ago called Show. But it's just a lifelong passion for films and filmmaking and movies and art in general.
And you do a variety of work. I went to your website, and it lists filmmaking, librarian, web design, etc.
Right. My day job is a librarian at the Danville Public Library. I'm in charge of the audiovisual department. I also do the website for the library and websites for Red Mask Players in Danville, which was one of the locations for the film, and some other organizations. And the filmmaking is just something I do on my off hours.
How did you choose the locations? Why Champaign, you know, if you're in Danville? As I mean, you do use mostly Danville, but why Champaign? And yeah, the location.
The primary location is Jeff, Bill Kephart's character, Jeff Cashew, his house. And we chose my house because it's always available. We can get in there anytime. The Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville, which is the home of the Red Mask Players, an organization I've been involved with for many years, was the theater of the play within the film. And I'm on the board there, and they were generous and let us in at off hours. The Danville locations, or the Champaign locations, include the High Dive in Champaign. That was chosen because we needed, and without giving too much of the scene away, the scene in question that was filmed there, we needed high back booths so that a character could suddenly appear from behind a booth. And those have become difficult to find in bars around Danville. So we found one at the High Dive, and they let us in off hours. The opening sequence of the film takes place in a laboratory, and that was shot at Isotech Laboratories in Champaign. And then we filmed some exteriors. There's a few exteriors in the film. Those were shot at Kickapoo State Park in Oakwood.
Hmm. Well, I did get a chance to see the film last night. Finally, you sent me the disc a while ago. I was doing last-minute prep. I often did laugh, yeah. Sometimes I was just sort of puzzled. Sometimes I did wonder, now, how did you do that effect on what is obviously, you know, a pretty low budget?
Split screen. You mean actors appearing more than once. That was just done with a compositing process done in post-production, and those shots had to be planned carefully. The camera was locked down. We would have somebody reading the lines, a stand-in reading the lines for the person who wasn't appearing on camera. The actor would do the portion that was visible. The actor would do the lines. We would do as many takes as we wanted. Basically pause the camera, the actor would go change costumes into the other incarnation, and then we would do the same thing. and then it just in post-production, it's composited together, glued together. And it was, the film was shot in high definition, so that makes the effect also quite seamless because the resolution is so much better.
Yeah, well, I didn't see any seams.
Yeah.
This happens a few times.
I want to interject that that's what sold me on acting in this film, because ever since, you know, Star Trek back in the 70s, I've wanted to be in split screen with myself.
There is a comment there that needs to be made, but we don't have time to go into that. I think it requires a couch of some kind. And that was the voice of Eric Sizemore, who is in the dual role of Frederick and Blaine, Blaine being the actor who plays the character of Frederick, but Frederick, who is one of the three, who sort of comes out of the computer, as it were, out of the brain of Jeff, the playwright, who is played by Bill Kephart, and kind of takes things over, much to his chagrin and quite beyond his control. It seems the other person who is the other two people involved as actors and characters are Julia Megan Sullivan as Tanya and Penelope, and Leslie Boedeker as Gwen and Janice. And I gather that Leslie is a relation of yours.
She's my wife.
All right, yeah. Which is one of the reasons
she jokes that she got the part because she slept with the director. And Sharon Tipsword, who's from Georgetown, plays Susan Stewart, the director of the theater of the film.
And of the play.
Yes.
Eventually. Well, you made a point when you first wrote to me and said this play was going on, because my answer was, well, we don't usually cover film on this show. Is there anything of musical interest? Mm-hmm. And you made a point to me, and also in an extra in the film, of talking about why you used classical music and why you used local performers of classical music.
Right. There were a few reasons. One is I love classical. It's my favorite type of music, especially Baroque. And the other is the very real problem of how do you include a high-quality score in an ultra-low-budget film. So for us, the answer was to use classical music, but music that was recorded by local musicians, because there's two copyrights in any recording. There's the copyright of the composition itself and then the copyright of the performance. And all of the composers we used were, the compositions were in the public domain, but of course commercial recordings of those are not. So I've gotten to know quite a few musicians in Danville and some in Champaign-Urbana in the last 10 years, and they all agreed to record these pieces for us, to donate their performances. We did license one piece, the Vivaldi that you played earlier. But for chamber and smaller pieces, it sometimes makes sense to hunt out local musicians. And, of course, in this area, that's not difficult. The biggest piece we recorded was the Largo from Harpsichord Concerto No. 5 by J.S. Bach. The soloist on that, the pianist, was Eric Simonson, who is a music instructor at Danville Community College. And then the pizzicato was provided by some musicians who have performed with the Danville Symphony Orchestra.
And I recognize some of those names in the credits.
And the Stephanie Swearingham of Champaign performed the pieces by Eric Satie. There were actually three Nocians and then three other pieces. And so those were... That's probably about half of the music in the film.
You included some music by this composer who I had never heard of, and in fact, we don't seem to have any of in our rather large classical music collection. Peschetti?
Yeah, Giovanni Battista Peschetti. And I wasn't surprised you didn't, which is why I included the pieces that Eric recorded, because I came across him by accident. He's known for one piece, let's see, I have it written down here. His the Presto from his Sonata No. 6 in C minor. If you go to YouTube and you type in Peschetti, you will see tons of video clips of students performing this Presto in recitals. other than that, his stuff is extremely obscure. As a librarian, I've done extensive searches on library databases of music libraries. Very little of his work has been recorded. So I don't read music, so it was a challenge for me. I had the actual compositions, but I had no way of knowing what they sounded like. And there were no recordings available for any of them except for this one famous Presto. So I found, so Stephanie recorded them for me, and on the basis of that, I chose three of the pieces, and those were then used in the film.
Eric recorded them for you.
Eric Simonson recorded them. Stephanie actually recorded the works so I could just sort of quick and dirty version so I could listen to them. And then she wasn't able to record those later, so then Eric went and recorded them.
And here is Eric playing that famous Presto by, what was his first name, Giovanni?
Giovanni Battista Pichetti.
Everybody back then was Giovanni Battista something, it seems like, at least if they wrote music. Eric Simonson here on Live and Local from the film Revolting by Mike Boedeker. So that music does show up a number of times in the film. What is the piano motif? What did you have in mind in creating the piano motif? Because there was a lot of times where I thought the piano sounded like it was coming from Jeff, the playwright's house.
Right. You're talking specifically of the Bach? That's the character's favorite piece of music in the film, and then that's the one that the characters play for him later. Yeah, sometimes it was supposed to be practical music as though it were coming from a CD player, and then other times, it's overlaid music.
Well, in the case of the Pichettis, it does show up, and then the Satie music shows up. We'll have a sample of that in just a minute.
Yeah, the Pichetti, that presto you just heard, appears in a scene where Jeff is, and again, trying not to give too much away, but he's trying to block the thoughts of the characters in his head. So he listens to this frenetic piece with headphones on. And as the scene plays, the piece ends, and he immediately turns it on and plays it again. It's like sort of the equivalent of plugging your ears and going blah, 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 blah. You know, he's just trying to block out these intrusive thoughts from the characters.
So Bill Kephart in the role of Jeff, how close is this character to Bill Kephart?
Oh. Let me see. What does he go through? No, I'm probably a little more grounded than Jeff, I suppose. Although I seem to remember in the earlier days that when we were talking about this, that there was some I did. It was easy to get to where I needed to get to with this guy. His circumstances are out of his control. So I mean, there are many times when we all feel like that, where other people and things are doing stuff, and you're trying your best to do what you want to do, but you can't fight those things. And I actually ended up having to make a spreadsheet for. So maybe I'm like Jeff in that sense, that he is a little particular about things, because we hopped around so much in the script, and his view of his own, whether it's mental illness or artistic struggle or whatever you want to call it, changes so much that I had to plot it out in order to understand what I was going to do in any given any given scene we were shooting. Was I happy? Was I upset? What did I know? What didn't I know?
It's the spreadsheet school of acting.
Yeah, spreadsheet school of acting.
But it worked.
It seemed to.
In this case, what you're referring to, the part that might be like the character, is he sort of has this, these cards posted on a door that outlines his the plot of the story.
Yeah, yeah. So being, you know, that trying to have that level of organization before you do something. And then I think the out of control thing, too, because I think that idea that I think we all find that maybe there's some parts of our lives where we just can't, you know, you're doing your thing, but all the other forces are working against that. And you know, everybody feels that at some point, so that was easy to tap into.
So what are you doing when you're not acting in films?
Well, I recently got hired at the university, but I was working at a vineyard for...
Good for you. I mean, nobody else is.
I know. Oh, maybe that's hush-hush. I don't know. Yeah. I was working at a vineyard out in Oakwood, Sleepy Creek Vineyard, so which was nice, too, because quite often all of us, since this movie began, and actually I should mention Mike and I met, and Eric as well, at a group in town called Champagne Movie Makers. It was one of their first few meetings. And that group has been pivotal in bringing people in town together who are involved in all aspects of the movie, whether they're a writer or director like Mike or actors like Eric and I. I've even gotten into acting. I've participated in online commercial contests and, you know, won money from those, all because of the networking done through this organization.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, you've said while we were listening to that last music that, like Mike, you're also a librarian.
Yes.
And is there an organization of librarians who act?
And the co-writer of the screenplay is a librarian, yeah. Brian Wilson.
Yes, librarians are very well versed, and we like movies a lot. I don't know, as an industry, I think maybe. Yeah, I do informational consulting. I'm a librarian, voiceover artist, pretty much. Actually, whatever I can be paid for, email me if you want to pay me, if you're out there in the listening audience.
I'll field the requests.
Thank you.
And censor the more interesting ones, maybe. Or maybe I'll send them along. Eric Sizemore is in the role of Blaine and Frederick in this film. And, you know, I didn't expect your voice to sound way down there as it does, because in the film it doesn't. I mean, you're using a different part of it. Of course, you have two different voices for the film.
Thank you. Should have three.
Three, actually.
Three.
Yeah.
Three.
Challenge is that for those who are double cast, they had to play their own Midwest accents. Then they had to play the characters as the characters, meaning sort of BBC-type English. Then they had to play them as the community theater actors would play the characters, which was more of a Cockney.
Yeah.
So the actors had to switch back and forth between those. This scene, for example, where in the table read, where the actors are critiquing, the characters are critiquing the actors playing them. Yeah. There's two different accents going on there.
Mike was a great director in that he let me. I do character acting and, you know, cartoons and animations and voicemail systems and all types of things. That Mike actually had a really good insight onto how to do each one of these voices. So I got to use, you know, three unique voices for the movie, and that was great. That was fantastic.
So now I'm going to see it again because I think I missed that one nuance in there, the in between, I guess, the character playing. The actor critiquing
the imaginary characters take themselves very seriously, so they speak in a sort of a clipped upper class English British accent, and yet the community theater actors playing them don't take them so seriously, and they play them with a more of a Cockney accent, which drives the imaginary characters mad.
And as a Midwest actor, getting a chance to actually do Queen's English and Cockney and all this is just fantastic. I mean, that's my favorite.
I've been on stage twice, and I was perfectly happy to have those be the only two times a long time ago. But when I've occasionally tried to affect a British accent, inevitably it ends up being sounding Southern American, you know, at some point. I mean, and I am always amused and sometimes appalled at listening to actual actors having the same problem. But you have that challenge. Well, the reason we're even talking with you folks is that your film is actually being shown next week. It's not the first showing. It's been shown at Sleepy Creek Vineyards and at the Catherine Randolph Theater, but it's going to be at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign on the 25th and 26th, part of a rather small film festival that consists of your film and one other, mm-hmm. which we're also going to be talking about in this show, which was made in Champaign, Leading Ladies, largely a dance or sort of revolving around dance. And we'll be doing an interview for that on either Monday or Thursday, depends how things shake out with some of our coverage of the CU Folk and Roots Festival, which is taking place also next weekend. It's a pretty interesting weekend. Next one is for music and theater and also for film. It's an original film created in our listening area, which is really great to see it's going on. And I know some other film, there's another film company that seems to turn out like C-grade horror movies or something like that.
There's a lot. Actually, there's a lot of filmmaking activity going on. There, we saw, I think all three of us were there last Tuesday at the Art. There was a private screening of a film that was shot that that all of us, I think, worked on too at some point.
Shut Up and Do It Productions.
Yeah. So there actually has been sort of this renaissance in just the last couple of years of not just shorts, but I mean feature films in the area.
But the networking has been great. This has been going on, but a lot of people didn't know that things were going on right next to them, and that's been it's been great meeting everybody.
And you every once in a while, somebody told me there was an episode of some sitcom, I think, being filmed on our on the Champagne streets or something like
it
that.
It could be,
So these things happen. We never, of course, you crowd around, you see a camera that looks professional, and you want, ooh, can I be in this scene?
Well, the barriers to entry in this industry have really dropped, and the cost of filmmaking has decreased extensively. So there's going to be more in the future, I'm sure.
Well, check out some local filmmaking next week at the Art Theater, downtown Champaign. You can go to their website. Do you know the address offhand?
I can give you the film website, which will then direct you to the art, revoltingmovie.com.
And you can find us on Facebook. You should fan us.
You should.
And it's being shown on Saturday, September 25th at 3 p.m. and 10 p.m., and Sunday, September 26th at 12 noon at the Art Theater.
And can they also follow you on Twitter?
I haven't
done. They can follow me.
Yeah, Eric would be the one who would
do everywhere.
That. I'm
everywhere.
I'm old school webpage design.
He put a gun to his head and couldn't get him on Facebook.
Well, it's Mike Boedeker, creator of The Revolting Movie, and Bill Kephart in the role of Jeff, and Eric Sizemore in the role of Frederick and Blaine here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thanks very much for joining us, and best luck with the showing.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
It is Illinois Public Media, to which you're listening, WYL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266AF Urbana and W293AF Danville. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And we have support today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. This Saturday's wine tasting will be from noon to 4 at in Bouvons, their new tasting room, and will feature 10 new wines. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. And we'll go out with a little music by Eric Satie.